Welcome to Step Into Magic, your weekly online radio show on how to develop your psychic ability with acclaimed medical intuitive, Josephine Lang. This broadcast is a part of the Wisdom and Intuition Network at metaphysicalwisdom.com. This is Anthony Taylor, your host, and on behalf of Josephine, I'll be taking your calls and questions. For those of you who are new to our show, Josephine has been a clairvoyant healer for more than 25 years. During that time, she has helped thousands of people from around the world to heal from hard-to-diagnose and chronic health issues. She has also been a teacher and spiritual mentor for hundreds of people who treasure her insights, courage, and love.
Hello, everyone. Our topic today is synchronicities and typologies. These can be like windows into our soul. Synchronicities are meaningful coincidences. People often wonder, what exactly is that? Well, it's when things happen together in a group. And an example might be, let's say you're thinking about going to a doctor, and you hear the same doctor's name from one person, and then a day or so later from another person, and then again you hear her name from yet another person. Now, that's a nice synchronicity. You think, that's a meaningful coincidence. And typologies are systems for categorizing people according to types. So that could be anything from hair color to extroverted or introverted personality types or any other grouping according to shared or similar traits that people might have. So today we're going to be exploring two typologies, and those two are numerology and astrology. And they really do give us lovely, clear windows into the soul. So that's why I selected them. But there are many other types of typologies that can help people to understand who they are. So I just go into these two briefly because they are totally, entirely, you know, full studies unto themselves. But I thought it would be very nice for everyone to get just a little bit of familiar with them if you're not familiar with them already. And the nice thing about typologies is they can really reveal our strengths to us, and they can also show us our weaknesses, which, like our problems, are often gifts in disguise. So another thing that astrology and numerology and some of the other typologies can do as well is they can show us where our soul growth lies. And this is why we're delving into these topics this week of synchronicity and typology, because this whole month of April is on finding our calling and staying in our joy and being true to our own unique purpose in life. But before I go into these topics any further, I always like to begin our show with our spiritual agreement. And this was a gift to me from our friend and mentor, Jana Massey, and she invited us all to share this agreement whenever we're engaging with others. And so I ask you all to make this agreement with me now. And it goes like this. Together, we acknowledge that everything that we think and that we say and that we do at this time will be of the highest good. And together, we ask for truth, the understanding of that truth, and the wisdom to use it in our lives. Can you all agree?
I do.
Thank you, Tony, and thank you, everyone, for joining in.
Josephine, we received a lovely message from a listener in California about last week's show on the inner journey, myths, archetypes, and dreams of the self. He writes, "Dear Josephine, I was deeply immersed in this week's show. It flowed somehow a little more than most of the others. That is, it flowed through me in an extremely pleasant way." Wow, isn't that a really wonderful message?
It certainly is. And thanks so much for writing in. We always love to hear from all of you and hope that you'll write in with your comments about psychic ability, especially in this upcoming month where we're going to be really delving deeply into that. You know, any pertinent experiences that you may have had or questions that you might have, it always warms my heart when you get in touch with us. And it also builds our community of global seekers and agents of positive change in the world. We're all doing this together, and it's really wonderful. Now, I'd like to begin off tonight by starting with our first slide. Some years back, I listened to Deepak Chopra's audio tape set of on synchronicity, which was titled Synchro Destiny, Harnessing the Infinite Power of Coincidence to Create Miracles. It was a real delight, and I highly recommend it to anyone. And in it, he says that our lives are shaped by moments of meaningful coincidence. And we can have an intention to nurture and participate in those moments in a positive way. And I was wondering, Tony, if you can show our first slide for our viewers.
Certainly.
And this slide says, intention plus attention brings manifestation. And again, thanks to my wonderful husband, Frank, who did some beautiful slides for us today. And I heard somebody say the other day, and I thought it was really great, that it is possible to suffer from intention deficit disorder. I thought that was great because we've all heard of ADD, you know, attention deficit disorder. But this is IDD. We want to remember to use our imagination and to put our attention on the path that we'd like to create in our lives. And, you know, we want to use our focus and our imagination to create positive outcomes. So we want to set our intention and then be on the lookout for synchronicities and give them our attention when they come, and then follow them to manifest what we desire in our lives. And Deepak also said, and Tony, I'm hoping you can show that next slide now.
Mm-hmm.
He said, according to Vedanta, there are only two symptoms of enlightenment, just two indications that a transformation is taking place within you toward a higher consciousness. The first symptom is that you stop worrying. Things don't bother you anymore. You become lighthearted and full of joy. The second symptom is that you encounter more and more meaningful coincidences in your life, more and more synchronicities. And this accelerates to the point where you actually experience the miraculous. I thought that was a very nice quote, and it's a wonderful thing because we often wonder, you know, how can we tell if we're making steps towards enlightenment in our lives, if we're working on our spiritual growth and process enough to make some changes? And, you know, Peace Pilgrim, who is one of my major mentors, she had some wonderful words to say regarding the first symptom of enlightenment, which is stopping worrying and becoming more lighthearted and joyful. And she said that worry is a useless mulling over of things that we cannot change. And she said, on the other hand, a concern is something that you can do something about, and that's fine. But she said, regarding worry, what we want to do is just give it over to divine hands. And there it is in the best possible hands, and we have to leave it there and let it go. And then, of course, if we're doing what we love, we find that we are in our joy. And so that is a big part of it. And sometimes that can require surrender to our lives. I shared last week that wonderful quote by Gandhi, which is where he says, you know, God demands nothing less than complete surrender as the price for the only real freedom that is worth having. And it goes on from there. It's a beautiful quote. So if you get a chance, look that one up. And that certainly is what happened to me in my life. I mean, I shared this story the other day on the radio show. And it's about how we can find our, you know, about how I found my true service as a medical intuitive and how we can find our true service in life. Sometimes we just have to come to that point. And for me, it was a prayer late at night, you know, where I said, if you let me live until tomorrow, whoever you are, I will surrender the rest of my life and do whatever it is that you want me to do. Sometimes we just really have to get to that point in our life where we just have to give up and just say, okay, use me. And that's what Peace Pilgrim said. She was out walking all night, and she said, if you can use me for anything, please use me. And that is a big part of this purpose thing sometimes. Well, I should say that it is one avenue into finding our purpose. And, of course, after I had that prayer late at night, the very next day, I think it was, or maybe it was, it might have been 2 days later, I got a call from a man that I had never met before, and I, you know, he was requesting my services as a medical intuitive, and that began my practice as a healing clairvoyant healer, out working over the telephone. And so that was what I would call definitely a meaningful coincidence. And it's not to say that I'm enlightened or anything, but it was certainly a step forward on my spiritual journey. And these kind of meaningful coincidences do occur in our lives. There was one time where I really needed some help with a very excellent counselor, and I didn't know who to turn to. And I had, you know, gone on a couple of leads of people who had said, oh, try this person or try that person. I just didn't find a good fit. So I went to the phone book, and I wrote down the names of all the different marriage and family counselors that were in the phone book. And with sincere prayer and personal private ceremony, I settled down with those slips of paper and I lifted them up into the air and I let them drop to scramble them up. And I did this 8 different times, and each time I picked the same name. That's a wonderful woman in our community. She's in the South County of San Luis Obispo. Her name is Kathy Bornino, and I highly recommend her to anybody who's looking for a good counselor.
Well, that's really, really quite amazing, Josephine. I do have my own synchronicity story. Well, actually, I have a few. But this one happened around 10 years ago and led to my moving to California, I guess. I was in California with Chloe and Leaf, and part of why I was here was to promote a book that I'd written on the Alexander Technique. And we found a school for Leaf and decided that we wanted to stay here. But I didn't have a visa, and I didn't have a job. And at the time, what I really wanted to do was to teach the Alexander Technique to actors, something I'd begun in England before I moved here. Well, anyway, I gave a talk on the Alexander Technique and my book at a Borders bookshop in Santa Barbara. And afterwards, the manager of the store said he'd heard about the Alexander Technique because he used to be an actor. He was a child actor. And I said, oh, I love working with actors. I'd really like to do that over here in California. And he said, well, why don't you call up this man called Mark Buer, who's the artistic director of the Pacific Conservatory for the Performing Arts? I'd never heard of it. And I thought, okay, I might as well. So the next day I phoned him up, and he said, well, that's an extraordinary coincidence. And I said, well, what is? And he said, well, I just had someone come in that had been to your talk in Santa Barbara saying that I should make contact with you. And before that, someone who came to your talk at the Borders bookstore in San Luis Obispo had said I should get into contact with you. And now you're on the phone. And so he's like, well, why don't you come in and have a chat? I'm normally far too busy to see anyone, but this seems a little unusual. Come in. So the next day, I think it was, I went in, we had a chat, and he said, you know what, I could organize, there's a window in our calendar, a workshop for some actors and some students and some faculty next week. I'd love to see what you do. He organized it, and then at the end of it, he said, that was great, would you like to work here? And they filed for a visa for me and everything, and so we moved to California.
That is so great. That's a wonderful story, Tony.
It really was.
It's a really amazing set of coincidences, and I love it. That's so great. So why don't we move on to the next slide then?
Certainly.
Because this fits right in. When you start, this is a quote by Steve Maraboli. When you start truly living, each moment of the day becomes alive with wonder and synchronicity. Isn't that great?
I like it.
Yeah. And so what I'd like to propose for everyone is to have a little homework assignment for this week. And that would be to just be on the lookout for meaningful coincidences or synchronicities in your life. And, you know, don't forget to ask in prayer or a private personal ceremony. Ask for direction from your higher self, for the highest good of yourself and for all, and, of course, in accordance with your true purpose, and then ordain it under grace. And then just set out and look for those meaningful coincidences. See if there's something that can guide you, something that, you know, you'll notice it. It'll have a little ring to it, just like this wonderful story that Tony just told of how, you know, there's the artistic director, and he's, oh, I'm supposed to get in contact with you, and somebody else said I should get in contact with you, and, oh, gee, why don't you call this guy? You know, just sort of those kind of wonderful things that can happen. Now I'd like to jump into astrology a little bit, because that's another wonderful window into the soul. And, you know, the astrological wheel, or the chart, for a given person represents a picture of the sky overhead at the moment of your birth. So, you know, so often we're looking at our chart and we're looking down at the paper. But really what we want to do is hold the paper up over our heads above. And then we get an idea, oh, okay, I see, it's the sky when I was born, of what was visible from horizon to horizon right at that moment when I was born, if it was light outside, or if it would have to be dark if you could see the stars. But, you know, you can just sort of imagine that the sky is overhead that way. That, to me, when I realized that, that took a lot of the mystery out of the astrological chart. And maybe we can show that next slide, Tony.
Certainly.
This is a quote from Anne Nordhaus-Bike, and it says, "For all of its complexity, astrology remains fundamentally simple. It offers a time-honored system of symbols, that sum up key aspects of human life while providing profound insights and practical guidance. And I couldn't agree with her more. I think that, you know, when we look at our astrological chart or think of the sky overhead when we were born, and of course you can do charts every day, but the chart that happens when we're born is called our natal chart, and that's what we'll just sort of speak about just briefly today. So some of the stars in the sky make up what we call constellations. And those are something that the ancients noticed, that there were groups of stars in the sky and they formed little images like a bear or a lion or a teapot or whatever. And then some of those constellations appear in that wheel of the astrological chart. And, of course, these constellations are moving all the time, just like all the stars and planets. Actually, it's our Earth that's turning and moving, but they're also in their own rotations and moving. The whole universe is moving. And so, but we can see these groupings of stars, and we can imagine those images that the ancients portrayed there. They might be a lion or a crab or a person carrying a jug of water. And those, of course, they've given names to. So the lion has, the constellation is Leo, and the crab, the constellation is Cancer, and the water bearer, the constellation is Aquarius. So given that we have these constellations, then additionally in astrology, there are 12 main ones that we see in the sky overhead. Now, as the Earth rotates on its axis, the sun appears to be rising and falling. As it's, you know, as we are circling around, the sun appears to rise and fall overhead. And there are also not only the sun, but there's also the moon and the planets. And these planets all travel through those constellations of stars. And the sun will travel through one of those constellations about one a month. So, for instance, we have the sun in Leo in the summertime, and it's moving through the month of end of July and early August. Or we might be in Gemini in the springtime, and or Cancer or Aries. And the different constellations, and the sun is traveling through those each about a month. And so that's why, you know, you say, oh, well, what sign were you born in? Well, I was born in the sign of Cancer or Leo or Sagittarius. And it's that month, about roughly 28 to 30 days or so, that the sun is traveling through that sign. And then your sign is sort of like your core self or your personality. And these various planets travel through the constellations. There's also planets in the sky. And the planets will travel through the constellations. So we've got the moon changing position every 2.5 hours. The moon, you know, is a quick moving, it's not really a planet, it's a moon circling around our Earth, but it moves rather quickly. So the sun takes about a month to transit through a constellation. The moon takes about 2.5 days. But there are other planets like Mars and Jupiter and Pluto, and those can take varying lengths of time. Some of them can take a very long time, many, many years, to travel through a particular constellation. And so let's say you've got the moon traveling through Gemini, the constellation of Gemini, right when you were born, and 2.5 hours later it's going to be into Cancer. So if you have a sun in, say, Leo, and then a moon in Gemini, and then you have a rising sign. So the rising sign is what constellation is just coming up over the horizon at the time you were born. So maybe your rising sign is Scorpio or something like that. So that's how the basics goes. It's like you've got the wheel might have the planets scattered around in there, but you're going to have your basic three, the sun and the moon and the rising sign. And those are all in the chart that is basically the sky over your head at the time that you're born. So I hope I did a good job with describing that. It's kind of a complicated subject, but it's actually really quite simple.
No, I think you did an excellent job, Josiah. It's much clearer to me now. I'd always wondered about what the chart was.
Oh, good. Well, thank you, Tony. That's really great. And there's a lot of really wonderful books on the topic. One of my favorites is called The Astrologer's Handbook, and it's by Francis Sakoian and Louis Aker. And Sakoian is spelled S-A-K-O-I-A-N, and Louis Aker is A-C-K-E-R. And then I also really love The Rising Sign, Your Astrological Mask, by Jean Avery. And the sun sign sort of shows our core self. Our moon sort of reveals our emotional self. And then the rising sign is what our personality is, or what we sort of show the world. So that's why she titled it The Rising Sign, Your Astrological Mask. And Jean Avery, Avery is spelled A-V-E-R-Y. So those are some nice general books to get you started. And then also Linda Goodman, she wrote a wonderful book called Sun Signs, and this book has sold millions, and also another book called Love Signs about, you know, relationships and astrology and how people get along. And those are some great, you know, very popular, very simple, easy-to-read books. So I refer you to those if you're interested in pursuing this a little further. So now, furthermore, the astrological wheel is divided into 12 segments. So when you look at the sky overhead, they divide it into the 12 segments. And they're at the first house. They call them houses, the first house, the second house, the third house. And so if you were to look up overhead, there's those 12 segments. And let's say you might have had Pisces in the first house when you were born. Well, okay, so Pisces has certain qualities to it. And that's the way we look at these, is that these constellations have certain qualities to them. So Aries is going to be, you know, assertive and brave, and Taurus is comfortable and deliberate, and Gemini is fluid and versatile, and on it goes. And Pisces is sort of that mystical, illusory. So then there is all of the houses have qualities as well. So the first house is the quality of self and identity, and the second house is of resources and comfort, and the third house, and on it goes. So on the natural wheel, the way that they look at it is that the first house has the first constellation in it, which is Aries, and it's also got Mars, which is that planet. And all three of those are going to have similar qualities. So Mars is about assertion and self-expression. The first house is about self and identity. And Aries is about being first and brave and energetic. And so all of those three would have those same qualities. Now, of course, they get sort of scrambled up in a person's birth whenever that we're born. But there are that what they call natural homes or natural houses to each of, or natural placements to each planet or each constellation in a house. And so I'll just use my own self as an example. So I was born with a sun in Leo. And Leo happens to be the natural placement for the sun. And sun and so Leo, they harmonize together, so they have very similar qualities. So the sun is about, you know, life force and vitality and self-esteem and taking risks and excitement and creation. And Leo is about being creative and taking risks and charismatic and fun-loving and those sort of qualities. So I happen to have my sun well placed in Leo. And then I have a moon in Cancer, and it just so happens that the moon is in its natural place in Cancer. And so the qualities of Cancer are nurturing and warm and dependent and sympathetic. And the moon is, the qualities of the moon are the emotions and security needs and caretaking and dependency. And so they, so I feel very much at home in myself because I have this sun and moon in the same placement, their natural homes. Now, somebody else might have their sun in Gemini. That's fine. That just means that those qualities of the sun, like self-esteem and vitality and creativity, are going to be a little more about being fluent and versatile and curious and intermittent and clever. So that's a nice way that we can kind of look at our astrology, is we can kind of see how things are placed, where they're placed, and what their meaning is. And, of course, this wonderful book, The Astrologer's Handbook, that I mentioned by Sokolian and Aker, does a great job of just that. It gives us all the qualities and where they're at, and we can kind of just do a little bit of astrology on our own that way. And so, as I said, each house has its own qualities, and each planet has their own qualities, and each constellation has their own qualities. And that's really the main three things to kind of get a basic idea on what astrology is about, is to realize that there's the constellations, which are made up of stars, and the planets, and then there are the houses, and they land in the different houses when we're born, the constellations and the planets. And then that'll kind of give you an idea about what is going on with astrology. So with that, why don't you show the next slide, Tony, if you will.
Certainly.
And this is by Dane Rudyar. And Dane says, astrology is a language. If you understand this language, the sky speaks to you. And there's one more point that I'd like to make here while we're on the topic of purpose this month and astrology, and that is that many astrologers feel that the position of Pluto, which is one of the planets in our chart, is significant because it points across the wheel to the area of our soul's growth. So I love this one book by Jeff Green, G-R-E-E-N, and it's called Pluto, The Evolutionary Journey of the Soul. And our soul growth is very closely related to our purpose in life. So let me give you an example from my own chart. So I have Pluto in the 12th house. Now, the 12th house is the house of the higher self or the unconscious, the need for oneness. It's got kind of that feeling of visions and dreams or hidden things. And so there's my Pluto in the 12th house, and it points across the wheel to the 6th house, right? Because there's 12 different segments, so if you were cutting a pie, if you were in the 12th slice, right across from it would be the 6th slice. Well, I don't have any planets at all in the house of health and healing, which is the 6th house. It's of service and work routines and health and pets and colleagues, but my Pluto points across the wheel to that 6th house. And here I am, a clairvoyant healer. And I always wondered, you know, how come I don't have any planets in the 6th house when I was younger thinking about astrology? You'd think I'd be very heavily aspected with planets in the 6th. But I don't have any there. So I was like, what's going on? Well, that's because Pluto, which is bringing us that energy of sort of hidden things and visions and dreams and the unconscious and the need for oneness and the higher self, bringing those qualities for that planet Pluto across into the house of health and healing. And so, of course, I'm a clairvoyant healer. If you look at it that way, it makes perfect sense because that sort of subterranean view is coming through in my abilities to heal. So I love that little way of looking at it. And
yeah, it's just charming, yeah.
Yeah,
I love it.
Where I find my passion and inspiration in the healing arts. And it's delivered to me in the form of psychic ability. So can you show the next slide, Tony, then?
Certainly.
And this is by Vihara Mihira. And this slide says, there is no better boat than a horoscope to help a person cross over the sea of life. I think that's really great. Astrology can really help us to find our way. It can really guide us and show us how we want to go, where we want to go, and what we're bringing with us. So I'd like to give you all another little homework assignment then. If you haven't done so already, it might be really interesting for you to have a chart done and just see where your Pluto lies. You know, it might reveal a whole lot to you about your purpose in life.
So Josephine, when you had your first chart done, did it help you to clarify your life's purpose? I mean, I'm assuming it happened before you became a clairvoyant healer.
It did indeed. My chart was first done on the day I was born.
Oh.
I had an aunt who was a very good astrologer. Her name was Marine Dragoni, and she lived until the ripe age of 93. She just passed away a year and a half ago, actually just a year ago, and a year and 1 month. And she was one of the premier astrologers in the Los Angeles area. She began teaching astrology back in the 40s and 50s, and a lot of the major astrologers now had taken classes from her when they were young and were inspired and moved on from there that were in that Southern California area. And so when I was born, she did my chart. She did the charts for my brothers as well. And then my mother decided to withhold that information from us because she didn't want it to influence us. She wanted to just see how our lives would unfold. And she knew what the charts had said and what my aunt had shared with her about what our astrology was. And I did finally get a chance to see it for the first time when I was in my early 20s, I think it was. And I was so surprised, but really not surprised, to see that written there right on my chart was this one little note which said, accident prone.
Oh, dear.
And that certainly has been one of the ways that I have done a lot of growth in my life, because you know, our problems are our teachers and they are gifts. And you know, that wonderful book titled Pain is the Gift That No One Wants, you know, and no one wishes to have in their life. And, you know, it has really helped me to do my growing. And so that was an interesting point, that right there on my chart was that little note. And then, of course, you know, like I said, the sun in Leo and the moon in Cancer and the rising in Virgo and then my Pluto, you know, it's all there. So I got a chance to look at it then. And I don't think I really understood it fully and I still don't understand it fully. I'm absolutely a beginner in astrology. And like I said, some people make an entire life study of this. It's a whole study unto itself. But it's a beautiful study, and it can really guide us a lot.
Thank you for that, Josephine.
Mm-hmm.
We have a question from Larry from Mount Shasta.
Oh, good.
And he writes, is astrology a way of prejudging people?
Oh, that's a very good question, Larry. And yeah, I think that some people do really prejudge others with astrology. You know, the typical pickup line at a party, hi there, you know, what's your sign? And I think that people sometimes make that judgment call right away, you know, oh, well, you're a water sign and I'm a fire sign. Well, that's not going to be so good. But I think it all depends on the individuals. I mean, Frank and I are both Leos, and Leos are not supposed to get along, but we get along beautifully. So it really just depends on all the other things that are going on in a chart and how that aligns and also your intention and your purpose and past lives and all sorts of other things come into play. But, you know, that's not really the point. The point is that astrology is here to help us get to know ourselves better. And when we know ourselves, we can accept ourselves and we can love ourselves more easily and move more fully into our purpose in life. And it can also be used to select really important dates. You know, I understand that Ronald Reagan, as president, had a premier astrologer who helped with major decisions for, political decisions or strategies with foreign policy. And, you know, Frank and I chose our wedding date with the assistance from my aunt who taught in the Los Angeles area. And we chose it for lasting love and balance and beauty, and certainly has been true for us. So I definitely use astrology for selecting of dates. Another thing that Linda Goodman talks about in her book Star Signs, and this is kind of old knowledge really, is about when to choose surgery dates. There's an old part of the Hippocratic Oath that says, you know, thou shalt not take iron to any part of the body through which the moon is transiting. And the moon only makes its transit, you know, I think earlier I said the transits every 2.5 hours. It's 2.5 days. The moon makes its transit every 2.5 days. And so, you know, you wouldn't want to make a cut on the head, which is ruled by Aries, when the moon is in Aries. You'd want to wait until the moon is down in Leo or something like that, which rules the heart and the back and the spinal cord. So that's another point in a way that people can use astrology to help them with making decisions in their lives. That's not only important dates for starting things or stopping things, but also surgery dates.
Josephine, there's a lot of people out there who are very skeptical about astrology and other typologies. And they think, you know, it's irrational, it's unscientific. And some of them would go so far as to say it's evidence of an inferior mind. I mean, I wasn't quite that bad, but I was a bit like that myself until I read Carl Jung's book on synchronicity, where he explains that synchronicity is an a-causal connecting principle pervading the universe. And by that, I think he means that events can be linked through meaning and not because one causes the other. For example, in astrology, the stars don't necessarily cause a person to behave in a particular way. Instead, the placement of the stars at the time of birth is meaningfully connected with particular traits in the people born at that time. So when people look at something like astrology and ask the question, how can this planet or star possibly affect me? They're looking at things the wrong way, because what we have here is not necessarily a causal situation. It's to do with patterns and meaningful connections that can help to guide us. And so it seems to me now that it's not that you have to reject science, it's simply that astrology is perhaps beyond science. It has to do with the fact that meaningful patterns occur. And if we reflect on our lives, we see such patterns all the time, like the synchronicities I talked about that led to me getting that job. And I don't think it was my desire to get a job teaching actors that caused those events to happen, or it could have been, but it was definitely meaningfully connected with them. And as you quote Joseph Campbell, or quoted Joseph Campbell in an earlier show this month, doors will open for you where there would not be any doors for someone else.
Yeah, that's very, very well said, Tony, and I think it's really true. And because we are so cause and effect oriented in our thinking culturally, we often find critics of both synchronicity and astrology. And, you know, there are some very serious thinkers who have also disputed astrology. I love that quote by Arthur C. Clarke, the writer of 2001 A Space Odyssey. He's a prominent British space scientist. I'm sure you know him well.
I've heard of Arthur C. Clarke.
Yeah. Yeah, and he once wrote, "I don't believe in astrology. I'm a Sagittarius, and we're skeptical." That was a really great quote.
Okay, that reminds me of something that Noel Coward, a famous British playwright, said. He also said, "I don't believe in astrology. The only stars I can blame for my failures are those that walk about the stage."
Very good.
Yes.
Well, there's another type of a typology that I'd like to address, and that's numerology. And my mother, Rachel, was a student of Dr. Juno Jordan, who was a very famous numerologist in the 50s and 60s. And Dr. Juno Jordan gave lectures at our home, and she wrote a very popular, well-known book on numerology called The Romance in Your Name. And I have my mother's copy, and, oh, I just love it. It's a really great book. And numerology has been very, very helpful for me in my life. And maybe you can show that next slide then.
Certainly.
So this slide says, and this is a quote by Glynis McCants. She says, "Each time I break down the numbers, a story unfolds. I can look at my client's chart and instantly see the origin of the conflicts in their life. I tell them their strengths and their weaknesses and show them how these characteristics interact to produce joy and pain and what the client can do to improve their own experiences."
Do you know what? I once met Glynis McCants.
Did you?
Yeah, I was at a conference in Las Vegas, of all places. And I do remember that she did the numbers for me and a friend of mine, Tim Freak, and we were working together. And so she did a thing for us on our partnership together.
Oh, that's really nice.
Friendship and working together. Yeah, it was really, really interesting.
That's great. And I'm not sure, but there's a possibility that she may have been a student of Juno Jordan's, too. I remember my aunt talking about Glynis at one point, and my cousin Shirley. They had been to a party and had met her, and I think there was some discussion about that. And speaking of parties and numerology, my mother used to do this wonderful thing where she would sometimes bring a lighted globe, and so it looked like a crystal ball, and drape it with a white silk scarf, and then she would set up at a little table, and she would do the numerology for people. And it's one of those things that's really kind of fun. It's like having your hand, your palm read, or having an astrological chart looked at. You know, we love to learn more about ourselves. It's one of our quests, and it's a really important thing for us to do, to know ourselves. And so it was just a wonderful thing that she used to do. So maybe you can show our next slide here then.
There it is.
Yeah, and I understand that Glynis McCants was very fast with numbers, wasn't she?
Extremely fast. She would just say, "Okay, when did you first meet? Give me the date," or, you know, "What's your birthday?" And then instantly all this stuff would come out. She was just like the numbers. She just lived numbers.
And they call her the numbers lady, don't they?
Yeah.
Isn't that her nickname?
Yeah. She's completely immersed in the world of numbers. It's very interesting for me as someone that, you know, teaches math on and off.
Yes, indeed. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So this next slide here is just a little primer in numerology, just a little way to get started. And so you can see how you just take the numbers and you write them across a paper. Like when I'm doing numerology, I'll usually write them with maybe a quarter inch or a half an inch between each of the numbers so that I have plenty of room. So then you write 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 across the top of your page. And then beneath it, you just write out the alphabet. So the letter A goes under the 1 and the B goes under the 2 and so on. And so you can see, looking at this slide, if you come down from the number 4, the number 4 represents the letters D and M and Z. And then the number 7 coming down represents the letters G and P and Y. So for those of you who don't have a slide, it's just like you go A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, underneath 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And then underneath those, you're going to have J, K, L, M, N, L, P, Q, R, under 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And then S, T, U, V, W, X, Y, Z, ending under 8, the number 8. And I invite you to try this at home because it's really fun and it can be very fruitful. So when you get a chance, go ahead and write out the numbers like that, like they are on the slide and like I've just described. And then write your full birth name. So you want to write out every letter with a little space in between it. Like mine would be, you know, Josephine Nora Lang, and with a little space, and then you just write down the numbers that correspond from this little chart. So Tony very kindly has always such a willing participant, and he has volunteered to let us use his name today as an example. So maybe you can show that next slide then, Tony.
Certainly.
So here we have Anthony James Taylor. And you can see that each letter has been assigned a number from this little chart that we've done. And the word Anthony, the name Anthony, the 1 plus the 5 plus the 2 plus the 8 plus the 6 plus the 5 plus the 7 adds up to be the number 34. And then the number 34 is made up of a 3 and a 4. And a 3 and a 4 added together becomes the number 7. And same thing with James. So James, the numbers that correspond are 1 and 1 and 4 and 5 and 1. So a J, if you look underneath the 1, you'll see the J in the column. If you look underneath the number 1, you see the A. And if you look underneath the number 4, you see the letter M. And same way under the number 5, you see the letter E. And under the number 1, you see the letter S. So 1 plus 1 plus 4 plus 5 plus 1, which is Tony's middle name, adds up to be a 12. And the 12 is made up of 1 and 2, and 1 plus 2 equals 3. So Tony's middle name is a 3. And then for Taylor, we get 2 plus 1 plus 7 plus 3 plus 6 plus 9, which adds up to 28. And 2 plus 8 is 10, and 10 is made up of a 1 and a 0, and a 1 plus a 0 equals a 1. So then for Tony's name, for his first name, we have the number 7. For his middle name, we have the number 3. And for his last name, we have the number 1. And so 7 plus 3 plus 1 equals 11. And then a 1 plus a 1 equals a 2. So Anthony James Taylor adds up to be a number 2.
Mm-hmm.
And the number of our name reveals our destiny. It's what we are born to be or do. It's our purpose. And this number points us in the direction to look for opportunities. And in this case, we've got the destiny number of a 2, which is about partnerships and romance and relationships and acceptance and also working together, details. It's a very nice destiny number.
So are you saying that, you know, with this information that could guide me to be thinking in terms of my own purpose around working collaboratively with somebody else or partnerships or,
mm-hmm.
you know, relationships, that that's the way that I will fulfill my purpose?
Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm. What's that bit about details? I didn't really follow that bit.
Well, you know, you are very excellent with details. I speak from experience.
Oh, you mean it means I'm a detail-oriented person?
It means that you can work very well with details. Details
oh,
don't
see.
Tend to slip past you. You catch them.
Mm-hmm.
You notice them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good thing. So not everybody is like that. A lot of people will have the big picture, and then a lot of people will be able to catch the littler details. And so that's a nice thing. You can catch the little details. Some people can do both. It just depends on, you know, their astrology, their numerology, and how the thing all comes together.
Okay.
So if we were to do the same thing using the letters and the numbers that correspond with them, and we did only the vowels of our names, then that reveals our heart's desire, and that's what we would really, really love to do. So in your case, Anthony would have the vowel A and the vowel O. James would have the A and the E. And Taylor would have the A and the O. And we could, you know, work that out and get those numbers to find out what your heart's desire was.
Okay, so I think that's a 7 and a 6 and a 7. So that would be a 20. So that would be a 2 as well, if I've got that right.
Isn't that something?
There's a lot of 2s
here. And then similarly, you can do the same thing with only the consonants.
Oh, that's going to take me too long.
Yeah.
We'll do that
We'd
another day.
We'd have to call Glynis for this one to quickly whip it out.
Yeah.
But our confidence gives us our personality. That sort of reveals our type and our style. And then additionally, we can take someone's birth date and add up the month and the day and the year of their birth. And this gives us our birth force. So Tony, again, has volunteered to make available his information here. So he was born on July 13th in 1963. And July is the seventh month. And then the day is the 13th day. 1 + 3 adds up to be a 4. And then the year, 1963, adds up to be a 1. So if we take 7 + 4 + 1, we get a 12. So in this case, Tony's birth force is a 3. And the number 3 is all about being creative and artistic and bettering communication and community through inspiration and seeking within and being joyful, self-expression. It's very perfect for an actor and a teacher and a radio show host, don't you think?
Yeah, I do like the sound of the number 3.
I like the number 3, too. It's a very nice number. So the birth force number tells you what you are like and what you're most likely suited to do without any training. This is our character and our natural talents and abilities. And our birth force is what we are in contrast to what we must become. And then each of the numbers holds a different significance. And volumes have been written on this subject, and they're very widely available on the internet and elsewhere. But in a nutshell, if you think about it, about the numbers, it all kind of makes sense. So the number 1 is about courage. It's about standing alone and being independent, having strong initiative, not taking a back seat, being very outgoing. And the number 2 is about being a peacemaker, of working together, collaboration and tolerance and acceptance in relationships. And number 3 is a joy giver. This is our artistic talent and creativity and self-expression, and they seek within. And number 4 is about construction. It's a good solid foundation. It's form and order, application management and practicality. And number 5 is about progress, about pack up your bags and travel and have some freedom and some, there's sort of an uncertainty to it and resourcefulness and curiosity. And then number 6 is about humanitarian service. My mom used to say that this one was about home, family, and responsibility. And it's truth and idealism and self-sacrifice. And then the number 7 is about understanding and intelligence, perfection, spirituality. It's about service and solitude. Now, Glynis would say about the number 7, she used to say, serve or suffer. I didn't like that because I have a number 7 in my chart.
And I have a 7 for Anthony.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah, and 7 is also about the sabbatical, about taking time to be on your own and to look within and to search. And that certainly has been a true number for me. And then the number 8 is about judgment. 8 stands out in a crowd. They can push and they can make it. It's very practical and powerful and calm. And the number 9 is about forgiveness and helping others and sort of closing the circle and bringing about the ending. And compassion and universal consciousness. And my mom used to say that the number, you know, when you come to like the 8th month in the year of the 12 months of the year, you get a little window into the next year's cycle. And she said similarly, the number 8 can kind of give you a little look into what lies ahead in a 9-year cycle, if you're working with a 9-year cycle. And Dr. Juno Jordan, in her book, The Romance in Your Name, speaks a lot about these cycles. She's got, you know, various... Well, there's another aspect to numerology that's known as pinnacles, where you can see what your first, you know, so many years of your life, what the overriding number is for that. And then I think there's usually 3 pinnacles in life. And so the, you know, the second pinnacle number would add up to give you another influence for the middle part of your life. And then the final pinnacle number sort of carries you all the way through the end of your life. And these numbers can have sort of overriding influences on our lives and how our lives play out. It's just a really fun and wonderful thing to do, to kind of get to know yourself a little better.
Josephine, could I just ask you one question about that?
Oh, sure.
So presumably, if someone is, you know, using the numbers in this way, or astrology, there's presumably a large, you know, psychic dimension or intuitive dimension in terms of, you know, conveying information or sharing it with somebody else.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I can remember my aunt looking at a chart, and she would kind of almost glaze over a little bit for just a moment. She'd kind of get a sense and a feel for it, and without really doing the math, because a lot of times when people are doing a chart, they're adding figures and numbers. They're seeing if things are in direct opposition, which means they're right across the wheel from each other, or if they're trined, which means that they're like in a triangular shape pattern as to how the planets are related to each other. And they'll, you know, they have to do the math to kind of see how that those angles go. But she would be looking at the chart and seeing the, you know, the numbers that are associated with the angles of each placement of each planet in each house. And she'd kind of just sort of, I don't know if she was doing the math or not, but she, maybe that's what she was doing with that sort of glazed over look. I know I certainly get a little glazed over when I'm doing math. But she would give it a look, and then she would just come out with these most extraordinary things, you know, that really nobody would know, and, you know, deep secrets of the life. And here they come just tumbling out. And I think that she was definitely going into a kind of a psychic space and just allowing the chart and the images and the pictures to speak to her and just reveal to her what was about the person that was pertinent for them to know. And the same thing would happen with my mom with the numerology. She would sit down and kind of look at the chart, and she'd do a little math and a little figuring, and then pretty soon she would just tell the person their whole life story, just lay it all out there. And I never learned either of these skills to any appreciable, you know, dimension, but I did always find them fascinating and really intriguing to watch these two women in my life working with these tools. And I think that most all of our tools that we use, like when I go out into nature and I talk with trees or rocks or plants or whatever it is, or communicating with animals, I think that these are ways that we can get in touch with our higher self dimension, with the part of us that is one with everything. And then we can allow these tools to just sort of free ourselves, mm-hmm. to let that aspect of ourselves shine through, to come through in a way that we can, you know, really get in touch with that divine self that we all share.
So we could think of astrology and numerology as more like portals, doorways to the higher self or our intuitive self.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, these typologies, they're all really fun and worthy of exploration indeed, because they really start us on the path to realizing who we are and what we came here to do. So I'd like to advise for everyone to have some fun with this week, especially if you can. And, you know, maybe pick up a book on numerology at the library and jump in, or make up your own meanings for the numbers, or think about what they might mean or represent to you. And then compare it with what other people have come up with regarding numbers. And this is not new information. I mean, didn't Pythagoras have a deep relationship with numbers and their meaning, Tony?
Yes, I believe he did. I mean, from what we can gather about the Pythagoreans, numbers then were much more important than they are today. I mean, every number had a particular feeling or quality or connotation, so they were significant. So numbers were quite sacred things. And certainly for the Pythagoreans, they thought that numbers were at the heart of everything. And so it was more like a way into the mystical through numbers. I mean, sadly today, you know, we tend to think that all numbers are alike. They just denote different quantities and that's it. But you know, we don't necessarily distinguish between a 5 and a 7, especially if you're a child learning math today. They just represent these different amounts. But certainly in the ancient world, there was a big difference, and numbers held symbolic meaning. And I think we're all aware in the Bible that certain names have a numerological significance, or certainly that's what I've read and heard. And then, you know, in my own case, I mean, I remember thinking, you know, when I read about Pythagoras, well, what do these numbers mean to me? You know, if there was a feeling associated with the numbers, what would they be for me? And I think I came up with, for oneness, I was thinking of unity. I mean, for one, oneness and unity. For two, couples, pairs, like attracts like. And for three, it made me think of the Trinity, or the three aspects of the goddess, the triple goddess. Four, I was thinking, well, square, cube, four seasons, stability, you know, chair.
Mm-hmm.
Five, the world of the senses, touch, taste, what is it?
Seeing,
hearing,
yeah.
And smell.
Yeah.
And then number six, I was always a bit stuck on number six. And it was interesting what you had said about number six being humanitarian service. And I was thinking, well, it's two threes, but I didn't really have a strong sense of number six. Well, seven, I know I read that seven is everybody's favorite number. And certainly I'm very attracted to seven. It's prime number. And it's, I don't know, 7 days of the week. It does seem like a lucky number for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
For eight, I was thinking of the Eightfold Path and completion. And number nine, I'd read somewhere that that was really significant in the Baha'i faith. And it's 3-3, so it's a square number.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that was just what I came up with. And I'm sure that if everyone made their own associations, they might come up with their own unique ones, or they could find that there's lots of things in common.
And then there's also that, oh, that's wonderful, thank you. And there's also that really intriguing things that happens to people. I know several people who have the number 4, 2, and 7 that appears in their life in that sequence, 4, 2, 7. And they'll have it as a telephone number, or they'll get it as a house number, or they'll be looking for, you know, where they need to go, and there'll be the number 427. And you know, these numbers can hold some significance to us. And for me, I have several friends and myself as well, where we see the 1111.
Oh, so. Yes, I see that a lot.
So like last night when I was shutting down my computer, it was 1111. I thought just before I turned it off, oh, let's just see what time it is. Oh, there it is, 1111. And I think that that happens a lot too. So there's a lot of mystery also associated with these numbers that just kind of give us a little reminder that it's, you know, everything is not always what it may seem to be, and there's a little more to it than we really realize sometimes.
Hmm.
That's great.
Thank you so much for that, Josephine. But
mm-hmm.
I see that we are getting very near the end.
Oh, dear.
So perhaps this is a good time for me to say that the link to next week's show can be found on Josephine's website. Simply go to stepintomagic.com and click on radio. And if you have enjoyed the show, we really hope that you will tell your friends. We love it when you're on the air with us, when you send us your messages, and when you call in with your questions and comments. So if you've been tempted to make contact but haven't yet, please do. We'd love to hear from you. For Josephine, are there any parting words that you'd like to say?
Well, yes, I would. And you know, many ways we're all alike. But in regards to our purpose in life, we really are all different and unique. But we each add to the whole. It's sort of like that jigsaw puzzle idea, our own little piece that we have. And when we head off into our own authentic lives, ultimately the path is ours and ours alone to make. And no one else will know the way. But there's a few roadmaps, you know, that can get us started. And these various tools and techniques that we've explored over the past month to help us know ourselves, each of these can be used as entry points into the forest of our own lives, and they can get us going in the right direction. And then from there, we get to make the discoveries on our own. And this is how we find the gold of our own true self and bring back to the world, bring back to the whole to share with the world, you know, each of our own individual ways, each of our own things. It's like the gifts that we ourselves have to share with everyone. So I really appreciate all of you taking the time to listen tonight and sharing with me the gift of your time. And in closing, I'd like to share this little blessing with you. As our gifts are given in love, they are received in love. And we honor their wise use and their increase for all concerned. And so it is.
Thank you so much for that, Josephine. As always, it's been a real pleasure talking with you tonight. And I trust that everyone listening has learned lots of valuable things about synchronicities and typologies. This has been show number PS-4.14, and we look forward to having all of you join us again next week when Josephine will be talking directly about psychic ability and how we can develop it.
Tony and I wish you all insight, wisdom, and magic as you pursue the journey of inner knowing, and I hold you all in light and in love. Thank you so much for listening. This is Josephine Lang. Until next week, good night.